Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances.
Former U.S. Congresswoman Gabby Gifford speaking from the House floor in 2011.
She's quoting from the headliner of the Bill of Rights there, Jeff, ratified 225 years ago this month. These days, the First Amendment, which we just heard, it takes up the length of just two tweets.
That's good to
comes
know.
In at 280 characters. So today we're wondering, how well does it cover the range of expression in a society where 500 million tweets is just an average day on the internet? Where does free speech end and hate speech begin? These are just a few of the questions and issues raised by our topic this hour, and we want your views now. Should the First Amendment protect all forms of speech? Simple question, lots of ways to answer it.
From our survey, Krista in Roseburg says no. In her words, it can be hateful and damaging. Jillian in Arcata says yes, freedom of speech should include all language, words, phrases, and symbols, because as soon as you begin censoring free expression, it is no longer free and it becomes subject to bias and manipulation. Let's get your thoughts. Free expression, protests on the streets, demonstrations, where should things be limited, if at all? 800-838-3760 by phone, joined by email at jx@jeffnet.org.
Here's another response we got from Brookings, no name given. They said, no, not all speech is protected by the First Amendment, not by a long shot. It's well established that certain types of speech are not protected, such as speech that incites violence and causes panic. Additionally, restrictions on speech such as advertising and billboards are important as long as they serve a legitimate purpose. Continuing here from Brookings, defamation laws are critical and restrictions on things like porn in the grocery store and on TV are reasonable. However, flag burning should be protected as we are a country that allows its citizens to criticize the government. Our country was founded on that. So that's from Brookings. Here's another one from the Coast, Roger in Coos County. He has a very different perspective. He says, if all speech isn't protected, who decides what is and isn't allowed under the First Amendment, and what criteria is used to determine what isn't allowed? Without the standard of all speech being protected and the decision of what is protected or not, that becomes arbitrary and subject to the whims of those in power. So that from Roger in Coos County, saying we got to let it all in or none of it's free. Where do you stand on the limits of First Amendment protections and their limitations? Call us now, 800-838-3760, or send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org.
Just last night, I got a reminder of the fact that there are certainly some limits that that already exist. You know, the whole idea of shouting fire in a crowded theater. And it was in a piece, actually, on Samantha Bee's show on TV about people who put fake news out there. And the questioner said to the guy who had put out a lot of fake news articles, is it okay to shout fire in a crowded theater? And then just whisper, just kidding.
Just kidding. And, you know, the Supreme Court has ruled on these questions throughout the years. I'd love to hear from people with a base of knowledge in that way. It really raises an interesting question, Jeff, the age that we're living in and how easy it is to have a megaphone, to reach a lot of eyes and ears without any accountability for the truth of what you're saying or the accuracy of what you're saying. So where does the editorial responsibility lie there? Is it with the services like Facebook and Twitter who put these things out there, or is it with the individual users ourselves to be more discerning about the content that we take in and how we react to it? All these issues under a very big umbrella today on Vents Day. We're talking about the First Amendment and so much to cover. We want your phone calls and emails after this break.
Is it ultimately just that we limit ourselves? What are the limits of free speech, if any? 800-838-3760 to join the conversation on this Vents Day by phone, or send your messages to jx@jeffnet.org.
Thousands of people are standing on a frozen prairie in North Dakota right now to protest the construction of a pipeline. Meanwhile, those late-night tweets from the president-elect, they flow freely, and one recently suggested making it against the law to burn the American flag, a long-protected form of protest. And just yesterday, we heard that German Chancellor Angela Merkel has proposed a ban on women wearing full veils or burkas in that country. So this raises a lot of interesting questions about freedom of expression and freedom of speech in our country. Join us with your thoughts. Again, that's 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org to send us an email.
Let us start taking some calls. Here is Derek and Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day. Free speech, the topic.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for taking my call. I don't think the question should be what are the limits, if any. I don't know how many people would dispute that there should be some limits. The fire in a crowded theater is a classic example. But what concerns me is that I feel like on the left there's been a lot of it appears like an attempt to suppress the views of the alt-right and some of the more what a lot on the left consider unsavory positions and certainly racist positions. I actually agree with it, but I don't want to suppress it because much in the same way when the ACLU supported the right of the KKK to march in Skokie, Illinois, it's not that we feel like those sunshine is the best disinfectant, is how they would argue it.
Mm-hmm. But can you condemn without suppressing?
Well, of course, yeah. And so that's the whole point, is that it's like you want those views to be out there so you can debate, argue, and without violently engaging or without inciting violence. And that's where that boundary lies. I mean, it's inappropriate to incite someone else to violence. And the person that wrote asking who decides it, well, of course the courts decide it. I mean, that's how all our law gets petered out and parsed. For better or worse, it's a judge somewhere deciding. And so that's more difficult now that the politicization of judges seems outright in your face with Supreme Court justices on both left and right responding the way they have, but that's the best system we've got.
All right, Derek, thanks for the thoughts. Appreciate it. We want to hear your thoughts on this, Vince Day, about free speech and if there are limits, what the logical limits are. Is it just self-limiting beyond things like shouting fire in a crowded theater? 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org.
Derek and Talent, they're talking about, well, it's the best we got. We have another comment here from Talent. Maya in Talent says, speech that espouses domination of one race over another, it's not really speech. It's an act of violence and threatens the safety of people in our community. When they wrote the First Amendment, they were protecting their rights as subjects of a king to denounce their oppressor, which is very different from how people claim freedom of speech today. It was a different time and a different context. That coming from Maya in Talent. And I think that raises an interesting point. We keep going back to this classic example of, well, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater, but you know, if you think of the theater as sort of society, you know, what is the equivalent of yelling fire or of inciting panic and violence, especially when you can reach so many people through the internet and social media? So really complicated pretzel here to sort out in our day and age using a text that is about 225 years old.
Indeed. And I was writing down while Derek was talking about do not incite violence, but, you know, you can incite voting through words as well. I mean, and I was just thinking about the fact that Donald Trump, for example, actually called Hillary Clinton the devil a couple of times on the campaign trail. So a lot
of it, he wanted to put her in jail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of it comes back to where are the limits you place upon yourself and whether those limits have become a lot looser over time.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of loose limits, we batted this topic around social media yesterday, putting up a survey with a very broad question. Should the First Amendment protect all forms of speech? That's a jumping off point for this conversation. About half the people who answered our online survey said yes, no qualifications. The other half were pretty much split between no and varying shades of it depends. So again, the question, should the First Amendment protect all forms of speech? An unequivocal yes coming from Mount Shasta, no name given. They say either all speech is protected or none is. Christopher in Ashland on the other side of the coin, he says, and this is an interesting, rather lengthy comment, the First Amendment does not protect all forms of speech. Military secrets, incitement, some forms of obscenity and pornography, threatening statements, again, yelling fire in a movie theater. There are many forms of unlawful speech, and we are entirely justified as a society to draw those boundaries, and the courts have agreed. But we have rightly been very reluctant to outlaw the exchange of political ideas. So the question is, when do political ideas cross the line into threats or incitement to violence? Ultimately, I have to err on the side of letting very distasteful ideas in unless they're directed at a specific group or person in a threatening way. but we must also sanction, marginalize, and call out people that speak in ways that threaten our values of liberty, justice, and pluralism. That coming from Christopher in Ashland through our online survey.
Another phone call here. We'd like to hear from you. 800-838-3760. Free speech and what the logical limits are. 800-838-3760. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's John and Eugene. Welcome to The Exchange on Vince Day.
Hi.
Hi.
It's really difficult because it seems like, now we have this new layer with the social media and the internet and so on, manipulative lying, and many people saying things that aren't true unintentionally, not knowing that they're not true. It seems like there's got to be an obligation on all our parts to challenge things when we hear them and know they're wrong or think they're wrong or think they need to be parsed. And it seems like, depending on the size of our platforms, our obligations are more intense or more important. Like yours, for instance, if you have a guest on and he's manipulating the situation, you have a greater obligation to challenge.
Mm-hmm.
But all of us do. And I don't know how we confront that obligation. Trump saying that there were several million fraudulent votes, or he would have gotten, it would have shown that he was elected by landslide to the popular vote.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do about that? Because I agree with the pundits who suggest that he's greasing the skids for fascism. So that we ultimately lose any meaningful vote at all. And I think we're already there, so I'm more cynical than many. But what do we do about this? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't have an answer. I don't think it's easy to challenge. I don't think your job is may become impossible. I'm not suggesting that you fail at all in your obligation to challenge.
That we don't stop trying, certainly, yeah. Yeah,
that's right, and I think I don't think any of us may. I'm afraid I don't measure up. I mean, if I'm in a Bi-Mart and hear somebody saying something stupid and wrong, and that's going to misguide somebody else, I would be more inclined to just leave the store.
Mm-hmm. Okay, John. John, thanks for the thoughts. Very much appreciate that.
Thank you.
And I do find myself thinking when he talks about skepticism about where we tend to come down as a culture at the moment. My own personal analysis here, though, is that we're highly skeptical, which is what John suggested in there, of things we hear that don't sound quite right, particularly if they come from people who don't agree with us politically.
But not if we agree with them.
Exactly. We're a whole lot less skeptical of stuff that comes from our perceived side, whatever that side may be.
Mm, yeah, and I really am chewing on the word their obligation, because we in the, you know, it's hard to take as much sort of a browbeating as I think the media capital M tends to get right now, because journalists, you, Jeffrey, anybody with a megaphone, we tend to be very accountable for our words and for any inaccuracies in our reporting, or when we don't challenge people that bring unsubstantiated views onto the air. This show, of course, is all about opinion. Opinions, and this segment in particular is about opinions. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation now at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org, talking about the limits of free speech in today's world and how the protections that we associate with the First Amendment may be changing given social media, an altogether different media landscape than we've ever seen before. We're also just talking about good old-fashioned divergent viewpoints. We had Christopher and Ashland earlier talking about, well, how do you decide the line of when speech or expression goes from being political to inciting violence? We think about that with symbols perhaps associated with Nazism. Here's one to chew on. What if your neighbor painted a giant swastika on their own house, visible to the whole neighborhood? Jay in Curry County, she responded to that premise on social media. She says, I wouldn't like that at all. I'd ask them to remove it, but they probably wouldn't be amenable to that. That's why they put it up in the first place, right? But sometimes a good old-fashioned community shunning works. So I like that comment from Jay in Curry County. Another one from Curry County here. Every state imposes restrictions on what can be displayed. One place might be very comfortable with Nazi symbols or even a KKK presence, but will remove a statue of a nude man or woman. Everyone wants their own way. We went to war with the Nazis, and I don't see Nazi-related symbols as something that should be allowed, but that's my narrow opinion. And we thank you for it, B in Brookings, sharing that via social media.
Let's take some more calls on this Vince Day. You're welcome to join us at 800-838-3760. Talk about the limits of free speech, if any. 800-838-3760. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. Let's go to Moshe in Eugene. Welcome to The Exchange on Vince Day.
Good morning, dear friends. Thank you for having this extremely vital program. Hope you do it at least once or twice a month. I'm very multilingual and multicultural. I'm Buddhist and Jewish. I'm a Buddhist priest, a therapist, and a biologist. What I notice is that suppression of free speech begins early in childhood when children are punished for speaking their own deeper views of reality, often purer views, number one. Number two, as a former federal biologist, what I've noticed is that in many, many hundreds of thousands of federal officials, over a million now, they've signed a non-disclosure agreement, and they can't speak about profound things happening to our government. But even when people don't have a non-disclosure agreement in the government, they often suppress their own freedom of speech because of fear of retribution, even in the federal work environment, which is now rampant. In general, people need to feel free to speak in many languages and sing and chant and pray in many languages, not just English. So if you're Native American or Indigenous, speak the other languages so you've got a parallel track to discovering your deeper truth, because the deeper problem, as I see it, is the internalized oppression of people not speaking what they feel in their heart and giving it voice through singing and through action. We need to recognize how much self-oppression there is around speech and free it up through joyful singing and laughter, as well as speaking a deeper truth beyond what the cultural norms seem to allow.
All right, Moshe, thank you for that. Appreciate it. Moshe.
So dealing with our internalized oppression, and in my family and friends, actually the unexpressed thought is the rarer animal. So I'm curious, what's the diversity of experience out there today listening when it comes to freedom of speech? And we're using freedom of speech and freedom of expression somewhat interchangeably here. We had some folks on our survey push back on that, saying, you know, burning a flag isn't speech. I think that, you know, the courts would disagree in terms of how we think about what is speech and what is protest. We want to hear from you about these issues, 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org to get onto the phone lines here or into our inbox. Britta in Medford says, it's a slippery slope to limit some groups' freedom of speech. Who gets to decide what one group gets to say and not say? I think law enforcement should closely monitor groups that espouse questionable speech. What do you think about that? The FBI certainly has a history of monitoring people whose views run counter to the prevailing current. We want to hear from you now, 800-838-3760. And looks like we have some calls on the line. You want to go to Chuck in Klamath Falls?
Here we go. Chuck, welcome to The Exchange on Vince Day.
Yes, I just want to talk about my perception of the root cause of this issue that exploding the way it has. I'm 91, so I've lived through a fair piece of our history recently.
Mm-hmm, certainly.
And we used to have a thing called civics that we taught in eighth grade and high school. And it taught about the responsibility to the body social as well as your personal rights. And the Constitution doesn't address responsibility. It assumes a certain amount because the white wealthy gentlemen that voted in those days had some degree of that, or at least a gentleman's agreement. And today we have the social media, which is totally uncontrolled and totally irresponsible. So I don't know how in the world we get back to some sort of respect for the society that we live in.
It sounds like you think it starts with a better understanding of what your own rights and responsibilities are within that society.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've sort of foregone that.
All right, Chuck, thanks for the thoughts. Very much appreciated, and I'm glad you're still around after all this time. I want to talk to you about the fact that the protests, particularly the anti-Trump protests in the days after the election, centered in Portland largely. And I just wonder if you see people who are demonstrating for an issue you agree with and they're demonstrating on the sidewalk, do you honk when you drive past them? And then if they get in the street and they block where you're going, do you honk at them rather than with them? I'm curious to know where things cross the line for you when you see people who are espousing feelings you may even agree with, what you think are some of the places where people should be regulating themselves differently about how they approach their expression of their free speech. 800-838-3760 on this Vince Day. Emails go to jx@jeffnet.org.
And can we remain neutral? I mean, we keep talking about how we respond to things we agree with or don't disagree or don't agree with. I mean, is there a room left in our society for the conscientious observer? Monica in Reading takes a hypothetical stance here. She says, you can't legislate morality. People have every right to say whatever they want, whenever they want, even if it's stupid or just plain wrong. If you limit it in any way, then it's not free. Susan in Crescent City says, to deny any form of free speech is to open the door on denying our constitutional right. Judgments on free speech require evaluation on a case-by-case basis with support of qualified judges, juries, and attorneys. Our existing libel and slander laws are in dire need of reform to catch up with technological advances and citizen journalism. So interesting point to raise there in terms of accountability in media, and I don't just mean traditional media like a radio station or a newspaper, even online newspaper, but our access to information, most of us getting that through the internet.
Right. It's, you know, it's interesting because when we think back to the original discussions of citizen journalists, people contributing items of interest to the world at large, even though they are not trained as journalists, I guess if that's where it stops, everybody's fine with that. But when it becomes people who are reporting on things that actually didn't happen, there's no sense of regulatory power. That this is where training as
that's
a journalist would help. Yeah,
let's
exactly.
Just start with what's called
yeah,
just making
called storytelling.
Stuff up.
Yeah.
Let's take another call, Jeff.
Let's go to Don in Eugene. Welcome to the Exchange on Vince Day.
Well, this is really interesting. I can think of two really powerful examples of the media being involved in factual or non-factual reporting. And the first one that I was very interested in, Thomas Jefferson, you know, and he had a critic who was his former friend. I think the guy's name was Callender, and he published a newspaper article that was absolutely slanderous at the time. You know, our president consorting with his servant, his dusky servant, to create new children. You know, what an outrage. And the Callender was widely criticized for it. It wasn't until 200 years later that we find that Jefferson loved his wife's half-sister, Sally Hemings, and they had many children together, which he didn't acknowledge, but he freed as one of the few slaves that were freed, and he had them educated. And so 200 years later, we find that Mr. Callender was right after all. But then there's the case of Dan Rather, who accepted a piece of completely fraudulent evidence to, you know, and he was axed because he had veered from the facts. Mr. Callender didn't have the facts to prove his point, but Mr. Dan Rather should have. I mean, he should have known that the person who authored the note was completely fictitious.
Yeah, the Rather case is particularly weird in my recollection because the document was, in fact, fake. But the overall point that George Bush had shirked his National Guard service was true.
Yes, but he had mastered the very dangerous skill of flying a jet fighter, which, as my late brother's late friends would attest to, can kill you. You know, he did do that, but Dan used the wrong. You know, he did not check his facts, and that's, I think, fact and truth should be the basis for any judgment of that kind of protest, and obviously there should be a law against. You know, against somebody because of their color or whatever. But, you know, the facts are hard to get. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard to do a DNA test in 1795.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. But yeah, great point you bring up with James. James Thompson Callender was his name. Thanks for that. Good to hear from you, Don. Let's take another call from Paul in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vince Day.
I'm trying to get this in 1 minute or less. First of all, the law and constitutional right has been adjudicated from the very beginning. We are a fractious bunch, and it's always been adjudicated. We've got a pretty good definition of it, with the exception of Citizens United, which was one of the most boneheaded decisions ever made, granting corporations a right to free speech. It's probably not going to be remedied in the current political environment, but needs to. The single greatest threat we're facing right now is a relaxation of our libel laws to move more into the area of English law, so that they're closer together. And the long and the short of it, if that happens, we're going to have all kinds of problems communicating problems that face our society.
So you're saying we're lowering the benchmark then on libel?
Absolutely, and it will have a chilling effect on writing and on investigative journalism.
As if there weren't enough trouble in the journalism business.
Oh, I see. So tightening our libel laws. Really,
yeah, or making it easier to hit the standard for libel. Paul, thanks for that. Good
correct.
To hear from you.
Yeah, so much to think about here. Obviously, we've just scratched the surface on those 280 characters in the First Amendment, taking us through American history and our freedom of expression and speech in society today. We want to thank everybody who participated either by calling in or taking part on our social media survey. If you want to get those surveys every week for the Jefferson Exchange, find us on Facebook @Jeff Exchange or on Twitter, same handle @Jeff Exchange.